Some of you have heard me say before that we have tried from the beginning of this place to stand back and allow events to unfold, to allow the life of the place to unfold in its own way and in its own time. Now, since the house was established, two facets of its life have clearly emerged. The first facet is to do with Michael the Archangel, and the second facet is to do with the Omega. We'll say at this stage the Omega sign, which has been important to us from the beginning. As you know, the Omega, the letter Omega, is the last letter in the Greek alphabet. The first letter is the Alpha, and Jesus said, "I am the Alpha and the Omega, the first and the last." Now, before I speak this evening about the emergence of the Omega sign and its significance, I've asked Elizabeth to play the recording of the talk given on the Michael consciousness, because that has preceded, in the unfolding of this place, that has preceded the Omega understanding. So we'll hear that now. Before we begin the communion, I want to say a word this morning about Michael, the Archangel. Yesterday we celebrated the festival of Michael, the Archangel, and this is very much in our thinking throughout the whole of the weekend. Without doubt, there has been a steady increase of a Michael consciousness during recent years, both within the church and amongst many people who are searching spiritually beyond the boundaries of the ecclesiastical structures. And again, without doubt, one man more than any other has done a great deal to prepare the way for this Michael consciousness, and that is Rudolf Steiner. 60 years ago, he was writing about this new consciousness that would develop toward the end of this century. Just after the last war, Canon Shepherd of Worcester Cathedral wrote a book called A Scientist of the Invisible. And this book was an introduction to the life and work of Rudolf Steiner. In the book, he refers to a correspondence between himself and the great Archbishop of Canterbury, Archbishop William Temple. And in his last letter to Canon Shepherd, Archbishop Temple said, "I am now almost ready to begin my study of Rudolf Steiner." A few weeks later, the Archbishop died. Now, who knows what might have happened had that great man really studied the works of Rudolf Steiner and the impact that it might then have had upon the church, but the time was not yet ripe. Now, what do we mean by a Michael consciousness? Perhaps somebody will hand me a copy of the Michael Office, because I would like to refer to it. Thank you. Let me say, before I go on to this, a definition of the Michael consciousness, that this consciousness is fostered wherever there is a dedication to Michael. So, in this very chapel, which is dedicated to Michael, a Michael consciousness is being fostered. In places like Coventry Cathedral, a tremendous impetus has been given to the Michael consciousness. At Burswood, which is rooted firmly in the Michael tradition, the dedication, or rather the laying of the foundation stone, was done at St. Michael's Tide. In places such as these, within the church, or related to the church, much is being done to foster this consciousness. Now, it can be defined very simply.
Michael is seen increasingly as the light bearer for the Christ. The Michael consciousness precedes the new Christ consciousness. Or to put it in more specific Christian terms, Michael prepares the way for the second coming of Christ. That which Michael does blazes the trail for the coming of Christ. Now, it's very easy to do two things with this. It can either be personalized, the Michael consciousness, into what ends up as a very sentimental devotion to an image of an archangel, on the one hand, or it can simply be reduced to psychic phenomena at the other end of the scale. And it seems to me, and this is purely my own comment on this, it seems to me that perhaps, and I'm being very tentative about this, at this stage of man's evolution, the Michael consciousness is realized in its purity when there is a connection with a religious framework. Now, this is not necessarily so, but it is important that the Michael consciousness has a moral and ethical content. Now, I'm going to quote from two verses of the Great Invocation, which is a prayer used by millions of people around the world to illustrate what I mean by this consciousness. The first verse crystallizes the Michael consciousness. The second verse crystallizes the Christ consciousness. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. A new enlightenment, a new preparation. That's the first verse. That's the Michael consciousness. Now the second verse. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. And there is the new Christ consciousness, which is what we mean by the second coming. Millions of people around the world, as I've already said, use this very powerful invocation. And undoubtedly this prayer, this invocation, has done a great deal to strengthen the new consciousness. Yesterday I was given a poster depicting Michael, the archangel, and the dragon, and it was a new slant on Michael and the dragon. You'll see it in the sitting room here at Kent House on the wall. Michael, he's a very benevolent Michael, and his sword is depicted as a torch. He's holding his sword in such a way that it is seen as a torch. Here is Michael, the light bearer. And he has harnessed the dragon, who's also very amiable. And you see Michael, having harnessed the dragon, carrying the torch. Now, what does this say to us? Well, it suggests that the Michael consciousness is enabling us to be reconciled to our own humanity in an entirely new way. You can link this up with all kinds of things. You can link it up, if you like, with the former Bishop of Woolwich's book, Honest to God, which puts forth the proposition of God as the ground of our being. You can link it with the tremendous search going on today for the self. Two men above all others have articulated this search in the West, one Saggioli, the psychologist, and the other Gurdjieff. Now, there is a link here between the new Michael consciousness and self-consciousness. There is a linking of the human and the divine. Today's search is not consciously for God. This is why thousands of sermons preached every Sunday simply miss the point, answering questions that people are not asking. The search is for the self, but it is in the discovery of the self, the discovery of a true humanity, that the link with the divine is made. This is the way that multitudes of people are searching today. And this is depicted in the picture I have described. Michael harnessing the dragon, this tremendous harmony that comes over from Michael, the torch, and the dragon. So this is the consciousness which is being harnessed and drawn today to those who are on the spiritual path. I'm just going to read now part of the prayer from the Michael office, the invocation to Michael. O Michael, Prince of Heaven, and Gabriel, by whom the word is given, Raphael, with healing ministry, to those who yet in bondage are, guide our footsteps as we journey onward into paradise.
So this has been the first phase of the unfolding. And allied to that, of course, is the development of the Michael link, which is a linking up at the level of the heart as we seek to follow the path of contemplative meditation. So we formed the Michael link. Now, the present stage, as we see it, is the awareness of the significance of the Omega, the words of Jesus, I am the Alpha and the Omega, for the work, life and work of this place. And I'd like at this point to hand round a memorandum that I will take you through, if I may, concerning this. I'll read it through with you in a moment or two when you all have a copy. If you want another light at the back there, do switch it on. So you all have a copy. I think it was about 6 or 7 years ago that Peter Dewey dropped seeds in my mind about the possibility one day of forming an order, a teaching order in this country that would be concerned with teaching the kind of things that we are about here. And it seems to me this is an important part of Peter Dewey's ministry, dropping seeds. He does it in a very oblique way. He often does it in, he puts it in a context that is quite different from the way it eventually emerges, but one learns in contact with him to listen carefully when he does drop the odd seed. And as I say, these seeds were dropped about six or seven years ago, and they've been germinating ever since, but one has felt, no, the time is not yet ripe. So, the Omega Order takes its title from the words of Christ in the book of Revelation, I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. So we can see quite clearly, and as I state quite specifically, that this order will have its spiritual roots in the dynamic which manifested in and proceeded from Jesus Christ. Now, the order takes its inspiration from the vision of two men. Some of you may have heard these names before, F.C. Happold and Teilhard de Chardin. If you've been coming to Kent House for a few months, you will have heard them before. And in spite of the fact that you've heard this quotation before, I'm going to quote it again in this context. In his book, Religious Faith and 20th Century Man, F.C. Happold writes, "Something is happening in the world. We are conscious of it all around us. Our era is said to be the era of secular man come of age, who no longer has need of God. This may be true, but may it not also be that we are now on the verge of one of those mental and spiritual leaps which have happened before in the history of mankind, eras when the corporate mentality and spirituality of man shift and expand and new vistas and interpretations of the universe open up." Havel then suggests that in this leap epoch of human evolution, in which consciousness is passing on to a new level of awareness and insight, the only acceptable religion is likely to be a mystical one, mysticism in the sense of experimental, or as some would say, experiential wisdom. That's the first source of our inspiration, the vision of Hapoel. In the book Christianity and Evolution, Teilhard de Chardin writes as follows concerning the approaching end of an age. After what will soon be 2,000 years, Christ must be born again. Christ cannot reappear tangibly among us, but he can reveal to our minds a new and triumphant aspect of his former countenance. Teilhard describes the realization of the appearing as the new Christ consciousness. So there we have the second source from which the vision draws its inspiration. The first is to do with Hapoel's insight into the new consciousness, the new understanding, which is described as mystical, and the second is in the revealing of the new aspect of the glorious countenance of the Christ. The Omega Order exists, or will exist, to extend this vision, and is founded in the confidence that to those who will follow the path of experimental wisdom, that is the contemplative way, this new and triumphant aspect of Christ's countenance is now being revealed, and that this is leading to the unfolding of the very being of the universe, the second coming of Christ. The effects of this are only just beginning to be apparent, but already they are being felt both within and beyond the ecclesiastical structures. And this is not just a religious concept. A new understanding is permeating the whole range of human thought and perception. In the context of religion, we begin to witness the great change from devotionalism to interior awareness. The scientific disciplines are opening to a new understanding of the nature of the universe, and within the arts and music, a new creativity is emerging which resonates with the new man. So we see its effects within the context of religion and spirituality. We see its effects within the context of the scientific disciplines and within the world of the arts and music, where a new creativity is emerging. And all this resonates with the new man described by Hapoel. So this is the background and the source of the inspiration. It is to encourage effective cooperation with these changes that the Omega Order has come into being. Well, here we're saying has come into being. The vision at the moment is that the Omega Order should come into being at Easter. And between now and Easter, we have a time of preparation. We come now to the aims of the Order. There are four, and these are very comprehensive. First of all, to follow those spiritual disciplines which awaken the heart to the truth as it is in Jesus. Now, those spiritual disciplines are related to the contemplative way. There are many forms of meditation today, and all have validity, all have their place. No one is better than another. But our particular path here is the path that is concerned with the awakening of the heart, the eye of the heart. This is the Christ Center, and this is related to the new perception into reality, into the universe, into people, into the whole of life. So as you can see, there is a great deal of potential within this first of the aims of the Order. Secondly, to reverence Christ under all forms to the exclusion of none. Although, as I've already stated, the Order will have its roots very clearly within the dynamic that proceeded through Jesus Christ. It is part of our work, fundamental to our work, to see the Christ under all forms, in the essence of all the great religions and outside of the great religions. Thirdly, to encourage the new Christ consciousness that Teilhard has described and of which we have spoken already this weekend, wherever it is found. And Martin has given us a great deal to think about in regards to this and has touched on the cardinal point in relation to it. We do not go to other people determined to get across a deposit of truth about anything, about the Christian gospel, about Kent House, about the Omega Order, about anything at all. But in our relationships, we seek to learn through our own spiritual disciplines how to hear and to see other people, and so give them space in which to expand, to see the Christ as he's struggling to come to birth within them, as he is also struggling to come to birth within us. And so to extend as far as we can our understanding of what love is about. And this is the great growth point, not imparting more information or a set of doctrine or dogma, but helping people to find their true selves, to encourage the Christ consciousness wherever it is found. And fourthly, to work for cooperation with the evolving life of the planet. And this includes the whole understanding, the new understanding from ecology and the new ecological concern to the revealing of the very being of the universe, which is the second coming of Christ. So I hope that in these 4 points, there is an all-embracing, or should be an all-embracing vista of what we seek to be about. We come then over the page to members of the order. Members of the order, first of all, share in its understanding and aims as outlined above. Well, is obvious. Secondly, they believe themselves called to a specific work to further such understanding and aims. The Michael Link, which is the great backup to all this, is concerned with prayer support, with meditative support for the order. Members of the order are concerned with a particular work. Now, you've heard me say on many occasions that I believe everyone who comes to this house, everyone who takes part in meditation, has a contribution to make. Now, it is very important that we help one another to discover our own contribution, our own gifts, our own talents. And members of the order will be those who feel that they have a specific work to which they want to give themselves, or it's a specific work, and for a certain period of time, they want to make a particular dedication to using a particular talent. So they believe themselves called to a specific work to further such understanding and aims. Thirdly, they make a personal commitment to the order in terms of time, talent, and financial support for at least 1 year. And this, of course, is related to their particular capacity, their particular potential, and what they feel is right for them. A personal commitment to the order in terms of time, talent, and financial support for at least 1 year. I mean, it might be, for example, that a particular member of the order would say, well, I have prayed about this, I have thought about this, there is a particular skill that God has given me, or there's a particular interest that I have, and for 3 Saturdays during the year, or whatever, it could be 23 Saturdays, or a certain number of weekends, or certain days, or certain evenings, I would like to make a definite commitment to use that talent, to use that time for the furtherance of the work of the order. And I would also like to make a particular contribution to the finances of the order. Now, I should say that all finances will be in the hand of the Omega Trust. As you know, we've been struggling during the past year or so to form a charitable trust pool which will provide an umbrella for all our activities and make it so much easier for us financially. So we hope by the time the order comes to birth, so the trust will also have come to birth and it can handle all finances and we shall get the most out of the money. And the money, of course, whilst it will be used for a variety of things, will be used primarily to finance movement of members of the order, because it is very probable that in the next 5 years the activities of the order will be throughout the whole of the country. Now, clearly, some people will say, well, yes, I would like to make a commitment of time and talents, and I can make a little financial contribution each year. But if I'm going to be called upon by the order to go up to the north of England to take part in a weekend at the church there, I'm afraid I shall have to have some financial help, because I can't really afford to pay what British Rail requires of me. So clearly, this is where there would be the need of mutual help. Fourthly, members hold themselves in readiness whenever and wherever possible to fulfil their commitment in and through the order. Well, it is assumed that most, if not all, members of the order will have many other commitments. They will have family commitments. They will have family responsibilities. They will have prior loyalties. But having considered all that, they will then hold themselves in readiness during the period to which they belong to the order, which may be a year, it may be two, it may be 5 years, to go wherever there is a need and where they are asked to go by the order. And lastly, members of the order will wear the Omega sign with which they are invested when admitted to the order. Now, some of you will remember, those of you who went to Lou Trenchard will recall how going into that lovely church where we had a daily Eucharist, we saw, at least I saw and others saw, quite suddenly, as I walked into the church, the Omega sign came at me out of one of the windows. There it was, in a circle, the Alpha and the Omega together. And as soon as I saw it, I knew, that's it. There it is. We've been looking for it. We've been trying to work it out. It's been waiting here for us to come, just waiting quietly in the window. And there it was. So we've been working on this, what form it should take, whether it should be an Alpha and an Omega in open work on a chain, or whether it should be engraved on solid metal, we don't know. We're still working on this. The thought at the moment is that it should be open work. We don't know what the material is to be yet. We hope it will probably be about as big as that, so that members, it will have a very great significance, and members will wear it when they are operating in the name of the order. But we do invite thoughts and suggestions about this, how we should get it done and where we should get it done. The work of the order is coordinated and planned by those members resident at the Omega Trust headquarters, Kent House. Its activities include residential training courses, conferences and retreats at Kent House and at other centres throughout the country. Members of the order are available to share in teaching programmes when invited, and these could be anywhere in the country, or who knows, if the good Lord wants us to do, they could be abroad. Now, since Elizabeth did this for me, we've been able to work out the constitution of the order, which is not included on this, but I'll now read this to you. We've had in the background of our mind all the time to make the whole thing as simple as possible, to avoid unnecessary structure, not to repeat patterns of old orders in the past, and indeed to make it very clear that it is primarily a means for facilitating service to the Lord. And the trappings of the order, whilst they have significance while they're being used, should fall away at a moment's notice if necessary. It could be that in 5 years' time, the order will have been used in the providence of God to extend, to articulate the new Christ consciousness, and then other movements would have arisen in other places,
and the need for an order in this way would have gone, right, we should be ready to drop it, let it go. There are far too many institutions and organisations and fellowships, I won't mention any of them, in the church today that are moribund. They belong to the 19th century. They've done a marvellous work in their day, but now their people are struggling to keep them going and not prepared to let them go. So I hope that we shall, that the good Lord will give us grace to let it go if the time comes for that to happen. But in the meantime, we obviously have to have a constitution for the good order of the order. So first of all, the core group of the order, we don't have a reverend father or a reverend mother, but the core group of the order consists of those members living and working at Kent House at any given time. So the core group of the order consists of those members of the order living and working at Kent House. And it could be that if the good Lord calls some members of the order to higher service then, this year, we hope he won't, then of course the core group would change. Secondly, a leader is appointed by the core group who, in consultation with the group, has overall responsibility for policy and administration. Now, we struggled hard with what word we should use here, whether it should be a president or an administrator or a warden or a whatever. Well, we all came down on the word leader. It seemed that we had to find some word, and this seemed the most innocuous of them all. So the core group at Kent House appoints a leader who, with them, has overall responsibility for policy and administration. Application for admission to the order is made through the leader to the core group. And if accepted, acceptance is then confirmed at the annual synod of the order. There will be an annual synod when all members of the order will meet together, and acceptance, which has been made by the core group, will then be confirmed. An annual synod is held on the first weekend in Advent. Now, the first weekend in Advent has particular significance because it's when the church begins to prepare itself, begins to be aware of preparation for the second coming of Christ. So, as I say, the first Sunday in Advent has a particular significance for us. An annual synod is held on the first weekend in Advent when all members meet to reflect on the aims of their work, to practice the discipline of contemplative meditation, and to consider future activities. In other words, we look back to see what we've been doing with a critical eye. We give time and space to allow the Spirit to speak in the present, and then we look forward to the year ahead to plan. And lastly, new members are admitted into the order in the Michael Chapel by the leader and two members of the order, one being a member of the core group. So this is as democratic as we felt it should be. This then is the structure. It's not like the laws of the Medes and Persians, which altereth not. It seems a suitable and, we hope, a workable framework at the moment. So there it is. And we wanted to share it with you at this point. There is time between now and Easter for more thought, meditation, preparation, and extending the vision. Thank you.